Blog Talk Radio.
Gonna tell you a little bedtime tale, legend it will become. Burgers flying out the door, sail on. 2-for-1, no concern for the future. Living for today. Fast food bite on your way, lay it all to waste. The masses are afflicted now. Moo, mad cow, mad cow. Mad cow line dance song.
Hey, Sign Guy Nation, welcome to the show. It's Sign Guy and QT with you for another Friday afternoon. Real fast, before we jump into things with our guest today, some show notes if you're looking for wrestling this week. Tonight, WCWO in Indianapolis, Indiana. Wrestling Theology in Carville, Indiana. Pro Wrestling King in Plymouth, Indiana. 3-2-1 battle up in our neck of the woods in Seattle, Washington. And ECPW in Kearney, New Jersey. Tomorrow night, NCWA in Clayton, North Carolina, featuring Casey Carlisle. TASW in Cypress, Texas. Wrestling Revolver in Des Moines, Iowa. And NGW Northwest up in our neck of the woods in QT's backyard of Tacoma, Washington. Without further ado, I would like to welcome our guest on with us today. He is an absolute legend in the Kentucky Anna area. Legendary Larry D, welcome to our program.
Hey, man, thanks for having me.
Well, since it is your first day with us, we're going to ask you the first-timer's question to start this off. What led to you getting into the business of professional wrestling?
As a child, I've always enjoyed it. I think I fell in love with it around age 6. And my dad was always a huge wrestling fan, and he came home one night there, and I'm from Georgetown, Kentucky, and he came home one night from work, and he had said there was a wrestling sign back out there at the bingo hall, and I had no idea what he was talking about, and he took us back out there, and I was scared to death, but as soon as I got over the fear of being afraid of what I was seeing, I fell in love with it, and then it became a weekly thing for several years. And, you know, I told my mother at a very young age that I was going to be a professional wrestler. And here I am now with my own 17-year career.
I myself got to perform in said bingo hall there in Georgetown, Kentucky, and always had a good time there. It's a great area for pro wrestling.
Who did you, what company was it, the Mountain Wrestling Association?
Actually, UWF's who I worked for when I was out there.
Oh, I got you. Got you.
Now, the Kentucky area has long been a hotbed for professional wrestling going back generations. You had the Memphis Territory running shows in Kentucky off and on for years. The Poffo family's ICW is there, and there's been many independent promotions, big and small, in the state of Kentucky. The fans there are very serious when it comes to wrestling. In your travels around the Midwest and the South, do you think that the Kentucky fans might be some of the more passionate fans in the country?
I think that the Kentucky fans are some of the most fun fans in the country. I think that the most passionate fans are in the upper Midwest, you know, like as far as like northern to my area, I believe in Dayton, Ohio, and central Ohio, and out into Indiana. I believe those are the most passionate because they're willing to pay, you know, $20 and $30 per ticket as opposed to $10 per ticket to watch an event. And, you know, they'll pay it several times per week in the same venue to do so. So I would say, you know, the Dayton, Ohio area definitely has the most passionate fans. But I absolutely love my Kentucky fans.
In Kentucky, they have a state athletic commission, which is fairly strict Every state, of course, is very different. Some states have no commission. Some states have pretty lax commissions. And like your state of Kentucky and up here in Washington, we have very, very strict commissions by comparison. Just as a general rule, do you think that in this day and age of wrestling, commissions overseeing professional wrestling are good or bad for the industry?
I don't see it as a bad thing. I think that a governed state, you know, to have some sort of protocol, you know, to follow, or, you know, just a set of rules. That way it's not as outrageous. I feel like, you know, the state of Kentucky keeps, you know, like, you know, the backyard shows or the half untrained guys. You know, you have to be trained and you have to be you can't get a wrestling license here unless you're approved by a licensed promoter in the state. So, you know, you have to, you know, pretty much pass this test, whatever, that he needs, or you come up through his training school, or, you know, he knows you, and you know, I just say I know you, and you've currently never been licensed in the state of Kentucky, and I wanted you to come wrestle for my promotion. I would then have to approve your license form that you would send to Frankfurt in order for you to get licensed. So, I mean, I don't think that's a bad thing. I think that, you know, it's kind of like wearing a seatbelt. You know, I always put that on, and I might not like it, but I know that if I don't follow that rule, I may get a ticket and have to pay a fine. So, I mean, I'm not against it. There's some rules that I disagree with, and there's a lot more rules that I do agree with. So I'm not against the governed state at all.
And for anyone listening that thinks that in Kentucky it's too strict to have a promoter approve of the license, in the state of Idaho you have to have three people approve it.
Now, Idaho, I mean, three people. I mean, I could see that a little bit. Three might be a little overboard. I would say two, maybe. But I feel like if you have to get voted on by a board here in Kentucky, you can't just send in for a promoter's license and then they send you a license. You have to, you know, explain why you feel you would be a great promoter. And, you know, they at one point they even had you had to give your business plan to show them that you're legit and you're serious about it. And I thought that was really cool. Instead of just saying, hey, I want to be a wrestling promoter. And, you know, up in Indiana, here's the thing, and I'm going to say this without mentioning, you know, company names, but there's a venue in Indiana that has a ring set up there 24 hours a day, and it's open 7 days per week, and they lease it out to about eight different companies. So, you know, if you wanted to say that you own a wrestling promotion, all you had to do was go rent the venue for the night and make you a poster, and then you're a wrestling company in the eyes of Indiana. So, you know, I think that as far as Kentucky having a commission, I think that we don't have to put up with that. You know, we don't have to worry about, like, oversaturation in one building. There's great promotions in that building, but then some may not be as great. So, but I think in the same area, it kind of bundles them all together and it hurts everyone.
Agreed. Now, in this day and age in professional wrestling, social media has become a huge part of the business, good and bad. It's a way of promoting shows, promoting individual careers, be it wrestlers, managers, referees, what have you. A lot of people on the independent circuit use it wisely and have benefited greatly from it. A lot of people don't really know how to use social media properly and have hurt their own careers. By and large, from the people that you interact with regularly, do you think that independent wrestlers and independent wrestling companies are using social media to their fullest advantage at this point?
I think that they're starting to. I don't think that they're used to the fullest advantage. I think the problem is that, you know, you have guys that get on Facebook and they might ramble about something completely off topic of wrestling. And I think that they might go out of character a little bit. And I think it could be good and bad. I feel like, you know, your Facebook page should obviously be monitored, and you need to watch what you say, because you never know who's watching. You know, I mean, I've heard stories that WWE goes back and checks the past post for, you know, 6-8 months, maybe a year. So I don't know if that's true or not, but I have heard that from several different people. So, I mean, you might say something today and may miss out on your job with the next company tomorrow because of something you said yesterday when you were angry, you know?
That is accurate. I know people have lost jobs there over past social media misgivings. You've been around, like you said, for quite a few years now, and obviously you've come across a lot of people that have brilliant minds for the wrestling business. Who would you say in the course of your career are some of the very best minds for the wrestling business that you've encountered?
I would have to say Roger Ruffin. I had the opportunity to meet Roger through a guy named Chris Hayes. And I think that Roger Ruffin has probably one of the best minds that I've came across in the last 17 years. But I would say as far as the best in my entire career would probably be Abyss. He's just so good at what he does. He understands it. He gets it. And he just is – he's the guy. You know, I've been fortunate to know him on a personal level for many years, and he's helped me quite a bit. And just talking with him and talking business with him, talking life with him, I think that the Abyss is the most knowledgeable guy that I've came across in my career.
Abyss, of course, Hall of Fame member now with Impact Wrestling. He was inducted last week. Definitely a very good choice there, as well as Roger Ruffin, who's been around for many, many years, training a lot of great guys.
I love to train a lot of. He's trained Carl Anderson, Chris Harris, I mean, Abyss. I mean, the list goes on. He's got a great school up there in Cincinnati. It's called Bone Crushers, and you know, he's got a great young group of talent right now, and it's interesting to wait and see who may be the next one to go up, you know, eventually from the Bone Crushers Wrestling Academy.
One of the aspects in professional wrestling that looks like it might finally be coming back to fruition after not being a very big focus for many years is the wrestling manager. The national companies haven't really used very many over the last 15 to 20 years, but we're starting to see a little bit of an influx of wrestling managers in the last year. Do you think that the role of manager is something that is underutilized in professional wrestling, or do you think that the current state of managers is where it should be?
I think that it's underutilized. And the reason I think that it's underutilized is because we've had smaller companies that, you know, run these promotions that probably have no business running a promotion. Will set up a wrestling ring and they will let, you know, one of their talents come in there and say, hey, my uncle is here tonight, and I want to bring him to the ring with me, even though he has zero training, zero knowledge of wrestling and the business and the industry itself. But, you know, they'll send him out there, and I think that it takes away from, you know, bless his soul, Jim Chadwick. I think it takes away from, like, Billy the Peas. I think it takes away from people like Bobby Blade. I think it takes away from probably the biggest right now in my eyes would be JT Davidson, who is probably the best manager in my eyes on this side of the country, if not the entire country. And I think it's a shame that people like JT and Blade and those guys miss out because of someone that can just throw their uncle or their dad in there just because they feel like all they're doing is standing ringside, and there's so much more to being a wrestling manager than just standing ringside. And I think it's a shame.
Agreed with you there as well. And speaking of the late Jim Chaddock, he's in the Turnbuckle Turmoil Hall of Fame. He's greatly missed for sure. He was a fantastic manager.
Oh, Jim absolutely was a fantastic manager. He stood ringside with me for 7 years, and he helped me evolve into the wrestler that I am. You know, from being young 20s, early 20s, all the way up until, you know, about a year before he passed away, I had Jim Chadwick at ringside with me. And, you know, really a really good friend, a really good father to Cameron, really good knowledgeable mind to wrestling. And he's greatly missed. And, you know, Jim always has a special place in my heart. And it's hard to replace Jim Chadwick, especially in the state of Kentucky as far as wrestling managers go. I don't think that there will ever be another Jim Chadwick come through there. I think there will be many that will try to duplicate what he did or try to, you know, be what he was and everything like that. But I just don't see there being another Jim Chadwick in the Kentucky area for many years to come, unless Cameron decides to become a manager, and then maybe we'll have Jim Chadwick back in a little bit.
One of the matches that is kind of split down the middle as far as wrestlers enjoying them or not enjoying them, and for that matter, the fans as well, as the Battle Royal. You see a lot of Battle Royals, especially on the independent circuit, on shows all over the country. What's your personal feelings on the Battle Royal match and how it relates to the scene here in 2018?
I think that it has a great place for professional wrestling. I just think that when it's done right, the Battle Royal match is a great match to have. When it's done wrong, the Battle Royal match is just a filler match to put the extra guys that showed up that night in there and give them a spot. But I feel like if the time and place calls for a Battle Royal, I feel like if it's agented right, I think if it's put together right, then the right stories behind it, then it would be great to continue to have Battle Royal matches. I feel like they're overused at times, but I mean I love the match itself. Of course, I'm a big fan of multi-man matches anyway, so I think that any kind of scramble or, you know, triple threat or, you know, four-way match or Battle Royals or Royal Rumble type matches are some of my favorite, to be honest with you.
Another part of professional wrestling that is mixed as far as wrestlers enjoying it and fans enjoying it is the comedy match. Every show usually has at least one match in there that's sort of the comedy segment of the show, sometimes multiple segments. There are even some promotions that are largely comedy promotions. What would you say has been the silliest match that you have been part of so far?
Back when I was a kid, I did a mixed tag team mud match. I was very young and had no idea, and I did it as a favor to Bobby Blade because his original opponent didn't show up. So I did a mud match, and it's not one of my best matches, but I think it's where I earned Bobby Blade's respect, and me and Bobby Blade become really good friends because I was willing to do that. And I would say the silliest match I had probably been in was – Either that or like they had this goofy dress up battle royal where you would like the promoter would have Halloween outfits for you to wear and do a battle royal in a Halloween outfit. That goes back to me, my point earlier of if there's nothing behind it, you know, if all you have for a battle royal is just to dress up in a Halloween outfit because it's Halloween and do a battle royal, I think that you're just ruining the concept of it. And there's nothing, no meaning behind it just because we're just doing a battle royal just because it's around Halloween and we have a SpongeBob outfit or we have a Michael Myers mask or something laying around, you know?
One of the ways that wrestlers, especially on the independent scene, make revenue for themselves is merchandise. There's t-shirts, hats, calendars, wide assortment of different merchandise on merchandise stands all over the country. What merchandise do you put out there, and what is some of the more interesting pieces of merchandise you've seen other people trying to sell to the fans?
I've seen, like, my merchandise is, my biggest seller is t-shirts, obviously. You know, I sold 80 in a month. You know, that might not be much to some, but, you know, back here, that's pretty good, you know, I feel. And, you know, but like Dave Crist and Jake Crist from my buddies there, OVE, you know, they make $3,000 or $4,000 a weekend sometimes just for shirt sales alone, you know. And I think that t-shirts are something that people can have for many years as opposed to, you know, a picture that might get torn up or faded or anything like that. So, I mean, I still feel like you need pictures, you need DVDs, you need posters, you need everyone's kind of going to like lanyards maybe or wristbands and things like that. One of the guys that I know had made me a gumball machine that I actually kept for myself. It's got like my logo on it. It's really cool. I think I would like to get something like that made as far as like an outlandish something that I think that would move on a merchandise table would be like that gumball machine because you could turn it into like a beta fish tank or, you know, whatever, you know, just you could use it for many different things. And that's something I'm going to look into in the near future because I thought it was pretty cool. And I think that it would sell if the right price was on it and it would be profitable. The thing with DVDs is everything is going digital download now. So it's kind of, you know, everyone's kind of has a network of sorts or they have some sorts of a, you know, download site that they can go buy the DVD, you know, and just download it as opposed to just taking the DVD case home. Me personally would like to just have the cases and just collect them and stock them up, but I know that's becoming a thing of the past now as well.
Well, at this point in time, my co-host QT Vokes is standing by. I'm sure QT has questions as well, so I'm going to pass things over to him.
Sounds great.
Well, thank you, Sun Guy. Hello, Larry.
How you doing, buddy? Nice to meet you.
I'm doing pretty good. Welcome to the show for the first time.
Yeah,
yes.
I'm really enjoying it. I love doing a podcast and getting to share my story and answer questions and such. It's a really fun time for me, and I try to do as many as possible because it's something fun for me, and it helps me get a little bit more exposure. You guys are in Seattle, so you know, I think that's really cool that you're in Washington, right?
Yes.
Yeah, I think
yes.
That's really cool that you know, I'm on a podcast here in little Georgetown, Kentucky, and talking to you guys out in Seattle, and hopefully there's listeners from all over that will maybe not know me and maybe will follow, give me a follow on Facebook or Twitter or something like that. And I just think it's really cool. I love doing any podcast I can do, I try to hop on.
Well, we have been doing it for quite some time now. And hopefully, if Goblin is listening, he'll give you a view on Facebook. Goblin, the wrestler with the green tongue. Yes. Well, Larry, I saw your YouTube video entitled TCW Thoroughbred Championship Wrestling, Legendary Larry D versus Ravishing Ronnie Roberts, and this took place in Moorhead, Kentucky. What jumped out at me was at the start of the video, I noticed the good number of overhead lights that were fluorescent white, and the walls of this establishment where this match took place were an off-white, and even the floor was a white tile. I also noticed that the middle ring rope was white, as well as the whitest light of all that was coming from the concession stand. My question is, did you feel like you were wrestling in an eggshell minus the yolk?
Well, I mean, I guess I never paid attention to that, but I mean, I guess I could say it almost could be like wrestling in heaven since I'm surrounded by all the white angelic lights there, I guess. Moorhead's always been a great place to me, though. I've really enjoyed Moorhead, Kentucky. I got to cut my teeth early in my career in Moorhead, and they currently don't have wrestling there now. And it's a good venue. It's Carl Perkins Center up there, and it's right across from Moorhead State University. So all of the students get to get in there, and they get to. I'm switching over to my headset. 1 second.
Oh, okay.
All right, I'm back. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem.
Moorhead's a great place, and it'll forever hold a place in my heart in my wrestling career because it allowed me to cut my teeth with a lot of really great talent and a lot of really good wrestlers from the area that got me prepared to do what I do today. I guess I didn't notice the walls. To be honest with you, I never did notice all of the white surrounding me, but you know, I guess if that's how they wanted to paint it and do it, then so be it.
Yes, it just reminded me of an eggshell. Yes.
Right. Yeah. If I ever wanted to wrestle, if you want to ask if I wanted to wrestle in an egg or an eggshell, I can say, yeah, I did there in Moorhead, Kentucky against Ravishing Ronnie Roberts.
Yes. Yes, minus the yolk. Yes. Okay.
Yeah, minus the yolk. I guess if the ring were yellow, well, I could say that we wrestled inside an egg, but I guess we didn't. We can't say that just quite yet. Maybe next time we go there, I'll have to get someone to get a yellow ring.
Oh, well, I'd be glad to talk to your commissioner.
Yeah, maybe. Shout out to Tim Gonerman, the Kentucky Athletic Commissioner. Maybe he can set it up.
Oh, okay. Oh, right. This is it. Okay. Maybe a themed wrestling match. Very nice. Okay. Well, Larry, did you yourself go to Moorhead State University?
I'm sorry?
Did you yourself go to Moorhead State University?
No, I didn't. I did not. I didn't even go to college. I graduated high school. I started my professional wrestling career at 17 years old, and I was a junior in high school. So I graduated high school, and I went and straight into wrestling. I wrestled 3 to 4 nights per week, and I would have to hurry back home just to get to school the next day and just doing homework at the breakfast table. One of the things that my parents asked is I would graduate high school. So I made sure that while they were allowing me to, be a professional wrestler, that also would give them what they wanted, and that would be seeing me get my diploma. Once I got inside a wrestling ring, it's kind of it was all curtains from there. You know, it's what I wanted to do my entire life, and it's something that I've gotten blessed to do, and I've not turned back since the first time that I actually stepped through the wrestling ropes.
Now, Larry, can we ask what kind of meetings you had with your high school guidance counselor?
The person that
wants to know what you want to do for a living. Did you have some interesting conversations with him?
They thought it was funny. They thought it was, you know, they thought it was cool. They thought it was a phase that, it was myself and one other guy. His name was Mike Roach, Mike Strong. And he was in there with me. He currently is not as active as I am now. They thought it was a phase that we would go through. I can even go through town now and see some kids that I graduated with, and they're like, "Wow, you're still doing this. You're still doing professional wrestling, I see." And you loved that as a kid. It's good to see that you're still involved and you're still active. And you know, I think everyone thought it was a phase, and now that I'm getting more exposure and more attention across the country and throughout the Midwest, it's kind of weird because my wife and I might be walking through the Walmart and a stranger will come up to me and his kid will come and grab me in a hug and tell me how much of a fan that they are of mine. And you know, my wife tells me that she can't take me anywhere because of wrestling, and we're always getting stopped and we're getting talked to and by complete strangers. So I think that's really cool in a small town of Georgetown to get to do that, you know.
Have you ever gotten out of any speeding tickets because of your wrestling celebrity?
I've gotten out of several speeding tickets because of professional wrestling. Yes. I was in Nashville, Tennessee, wrestling. We're doing TV tapings and such, and we went and just pulled over to make a phone call, and the police officer saw that we was in like an illegal zone or something of sorts, and he pulled over and was talking to us and said that we were down there with Burt Prentice wrestling at the Christmas show and things like that. And he looked at us and said, "Well, I don't give a damn where what you're doing or where you're going." He said, "But you can't sit here because about 20 feet from where you're sitting, a guy got shot and killed in the head last night. So it's not safe to be in this area. Go somewhere else." And,
oh my God! Wow.
Yeah, I was probably 18 years old at the time.
Oh, whew, okay. Whew. All right. Well, Larry, you seem to have a confrontation with an overjealous fan at that match with ravishing Ronnie Roberts. And this fan probably had his courage fueled by cheap Kentucky bourbon. My question is, how do fans in the Deep South, the ones in Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, and the panhandle of Florida, differ in the respect they still wrestle as compared to Kentucky?
Kentucky's more of like a southern, you know, it's more of a Memphis style here. It's more of a good guy, bad guy type thing. It's a it's hard to get the super indie stuff going, you know, like I guess it's hard to get like in the Midwest. You can get by with, you know, good guy versus good guy, bad guy versus bad guy, because up in the super indie promotions, there is no heels or faces, so to speak. It's just more of a respect thing, I feel. And, you know, they're just looking for a good competitive match. And in Kentucky, they don't really buy that too well. It's starting to evolve a little bit here, but not really. I think that Kentucky's just got good old country fans that enjoy good versus bad. And I think that going against the grain too much will probably be hurt your business as less than it will help, you know, if that makes sense. It's going to hurt your business more if you try to change how you do things. That's just the way it's been here in Kentucky for many, many years.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, at the 2 minute and 58 second mark, you were certain to test the top rope. My question is, can you recall your first match where a rope snapped on you, And was it a result of an attempted Irish whip on your part?
Not, fortunately, I've never had a rope snap on me.
Oh,
if it did, I'm sure that I would probably have cracked my pants, or something would have maybe, pissed myself or something. But no, so fortunately, I can't recall ever a ring rope breaking on me. I've been involved in a match where a guy hit the rope and the rope's broke, and he's went over head over heels and knocked himself out to where he was snoring. I hope that never ever happens to me nor anybody else that I know.
Were you ever in a match with another heavy set wrestler in the mode of, say, like a King Kong Bundy, where both you and your opponent hit the mat and part of the mat collapsed?
I broke a ring back in my early career, myself and a guy named Bo Johnson. I was about 385, 390. He was probably, 340, 350, and we did a superplex from the top rope on one of the old wooden rings, and it broke the center beams, and it collapsed, and it was pretty scary situation at that point. So if I ever came close to, like, crapping or pissing myself, then that was probably it.
Wow. Holy, okay. Boy, that, all right. So, Larry, when Ravishing Money came out, In your match, he received instant applause and handshakes from the fans. Even in the area where you had a problem with a fan, he had no problem. They even chanted his name before the bell was rung. My question is, do you know if Ravishing Ronnie tried to run for Congress in Kentucky? Because it sure looked like he was trying to get along with the crowd and trying not to piss anyone off. He reminded me of Jimmy Carter.
Maybe he should have ran for Congress. You know, Ronnie Roberts sure is a pretty good politician. You know, I hear he's a reverend now, so maybe it goes hand in hand.
Oh, wow, a reverend, okay.
Yeah, he's Reverend Ronnie Roberts now. He's not ravishing anymore. He's seen the light, and he's now spreading the good word to the lost souls. Maybe that was the beginning of, just helping the people out. Maybe he should have ran for Congress. Maybe he could have been, Congressman Roberts or something. I don't know.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, the ability of the referee came into question as you had to ask him if he had checked Ravishing Ronnie, and you obviously knew the answer. Only after you had asked did he go over and check it Ronnie for a foreign object. My question is, did you find out that Thoroughbred Championship Wrestling hired this referee that afternoon when he was done at the local racehorse track and indeed had no prior refereeing experience, but they hired him because they only had to pay him a double cheeseburger at the eggshell white concession stand?
Man, it seems like Kentucky payoffs pretty good, because most of the referees aren't trained and they get paid in concessions. So maybe you're right.
Oh. Oh, okay. But in all seriousness, Larry, the referee plays a huge, important part in the matches. What are some of the better Kentucky area referees that you have seen and worked with and hold in high esteem?
I would say that years ago there was a guy named Nick Barker. His father was Jack Barker. He's probably one of the best referees I had seen throughout. And then up in Dayton, Ohio, you got Rudy Johnson. She's really, really good. And, of course, Roger Ruffin, he refereed for the WWF back in the 90s and early 2000s several times and was a regional referee. So he's one of the best around. And if anyone can tell you how to referee or what you should do as a referee, then I would look towards Roger Ruffin.
Oh, okay. All right. Very good. Very good refs. Okay. Well, Larry, at the 447 mark of the match, or at least the 447 mark of the video, you told a rather big individual dressed in black to tell the fans that if they did not stop panning Larry Sucks, that you were, quote, out of here. Now,
right.
From my video analysis, the man you told to tell this to the crowd, I'm guessing he was about 6'2" tall and 320 pounds. Who was this man who you handed the microphone to and announced your verbatim? Ultimatum.
You know, at that point, it didn't matter. I just wanted the people to shut up. I can't even remember who the guy was at the time, to be honest.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, the rock group Primus has embraced and even encouraged their fans to chant "Primus suck" at their concerts and especially at the Lollapalooza Festival. My question is, are you a big fan of Primus?
I can't say that I am, so I must be the biggest fan they have, obviously. If they don't want the fans to chant that they suck, then if I don't know them, they're doing a great job of getting themselves over. Maybe I need to follow their lead there.
Oh, okay. Well, were you at one time considering using Primus's hit song, Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver, as your entrance music?
No, I've never considered that, but Big Brown Beavers don't sound too bad either.
Oh, okay. Well, I hope for reminiscing sake that you can go on YouTube after this interview is over and listen to Primus's Wynonna's Big Brown Beaver.
Most definitely send me that link, and I'll definitely not Google it, but I will for sure YouTube it, and I'll give it a view.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, Ronnie didn't seem to have any tattoos, but you have one on your right shoulder. Can you tell us what this tattoo is about?
The one on my right shoulder is a skull, and I got it when I was young and dumb. So if any children are listening, don't be like me at a young age and get tattoos that mean nothing. So that's what I have. So now I'm just working on making them look good at least. If they don't mean anything, then I definitely want them to look good.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, have you met the wrestler known as the Progressive Liberal who wrestles in Kentucky, and he comes to the ring in Hillary Clinton t-shirt?
Yes, that's Daniel Richards. I know Daniel very well.
Oh, okay. Boy, he certainly captured the nation's attention, didn't he?
Yeah, he took a really good liking on like HBO. He was on HBO and Vice Network. I mean, it was crazy whenever they went and followed him around. I thought it was really good for him to get the national exposure that he got.
Okay. Well, Larry, I take it a few months to publish the weekly top 9 and 7/8 Northwest wrestler rankings based on the action that I see that week or 2 weeks based on my shoot job schedule. I post these rankings on time, and the number one ranked wrestler for that week gets a host group parade. Past winners in the Northwest include Tyson Tank for 2 weeks in a row, Sunny Days, Pop Moonshine, and Goblin. You were recently ranked number one yourself on a list published by someone named Lee G. News Top 10 Independent Wrestlers for October. At number two was DBA from Detroit, Michigan. Have you seen this ranking?
I've seen the ranking, but I just share the – it's funny you say that. Someone got pissed off because certain people wasn't on the list, and I said, you know, I don't make the polls. I just share it because I was tagged in it. But, yes, I did see that. You know, I guess people have difference of opinions on who the top 10 is. So unless it's Meltzer or someone like that, or, you know, SpongeBob, whoever their top 10 is, that's their opinion, that's their view, and I'm not going to hold it against them. As long as I'm number one, of course, you know.
For being ranked number one, did you yourself receive a coupon?
Did I do what now?
Did you receive a fruit pie for being ranked number one, like I give all
no,
my
you
wrestlers?
No, to come to find out, I need that. I need to look into that. I'm glad you brought it up, because I mean I should get something for being number one on that top 10.
Yes. At least talk to your commissioner, your commissioner, or. Or whoever publishes this weekly ranking.
I'm gonna have to call, get up with Lee G News and tell him to send my cookie or a medal, one or the other.
Yes, I hope to establish at least some type of pastry treat award nationwide for rankings, number one rankings. That would be great.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, like okay. Maybe I can if I could get it to where I could just bake it a little bit, put it in the oven, kind of get it crispy on the edges.
Yes. Okay. Well, now at number three, there was a wrestler named Austin Tyler Morris. Can you tell us about him? And have you indeed wrestled Austin Tyler Morris?
I have wrestled Austin Tyler Morris, and I know Austin Tyler Morris very well. I used to wrestle for his dad as a part of the Mountain Wrestling Association. And I remember when Austin Tyler Morris went from talking like my 8-year-old son to talking like a kid that just hit puberty, and then now he's a grown man and he's turned into a pretty damn good wrestler.
Wow. You've seen his chronological development.
Yeah. I've seen him go from, you know, playing with Power Rangers to popping pimples and slapping women on their rear ends to winning world titles.
Whoa. Oh, okay. Wow, that's okay. Well, at number 10 was Amazing Maria. Both Sign Guy and myself are very familiar with this fantastic female wrestler. My question is, when was the last time you tag team with a lady wrestler, and what was the hardest knife edge chop you have ever received from a lady wrestler?
I can't recall tag teaming with a lady wrestler.
Oh, okay. Have you? What's the hardest knife edge chop you've ever received from one?
You know, probably my wife. I would say she chops pretty damn hard when she gets angry.
Oh, okay. Holy smokes! All right. Okay. Well. Now, you mentioned earlier a costume-themed wrestling venue to Sign Guy for Halloween. Were you a big fan of Eric Young when he put on the turkey suit near Thanksgiving, Eric Young?
Yeah, I think Eric Young is incredible. I think that, I guess if you make it to that level and they want you to put a turkey suit on and for a hot dog and a handshake.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, Larry, your dad had obviously gone to wrestling matches in the Kentucky area before you were born. Did he mention seeing some of the old legends, the old Hall of Fame wrestlers like Dick the Bruiser or Ivan Putski?
Nobody. Savage and all of those guys, so. Yeah, he was very fortunate to see those guys perform back many years ago.
Did your dad ever mention seeing Chief Wahoo McDaniels?
He mentioned his name. I can't recall that he had mentioned seeing him live, no.
Oh, okay. All right. Okay. All right. Well, Larry, it was good talking with you, and thank you for sticking in there with sometimes the slightly strange questions, and I hope to talk to your commissioner if you're ever ranked number one again to give you some sort of fruit pie or pastry. Yes.
Yeah, I mean, she brought it up because as soon as this conversation is over, I'm going to want to get on the horn and find out where that pastry's at.
Well, I agonize over these lists that I have to produce every week or biweekly.
Yeah.
But it comes with the territory. Yes.
Right.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, good luck in your Halloween action. I'm sure you're enacting in the next week. And at this time, I'm going to turn it back over to Sign Guy.
All right. Thanks, buddy. Nice meeting.
Thank you, QT. Well, legendary Larry D. QT mentioned Amazing Maria, who we do know quite well. And she is one of the bright spots, I would say, out of the Kentucky area. But there are a lot of people that have been doing very, very well out of the state of Kentucky. Who would you say are some of the performers on the independent scene in Kentucky that fans in other parts of the country may not know yet, but might need to get familiar with because they're going to be big stars nationwide soon? Oh, looks like Larry D dropped the call, QT.
Uh-oh. I think he may have been working on his automobile, maybe.
Possibly. Hopefully he'll call back in the next couple of minutes. But you mentioned him being active. He will be at the aforementioned Wrestling Revolver show in Des Moines, Iowa tomorrow. That's going to be a very, very big show. Lots of big-name talent on that show. So definitely fans should make plans to be there if they're anywhere near the state of Iowa. I believe Larry D's back with us. Larry D, are you back with us?
Yeah, I don't know what happened there. Just kind of dropped the call. Sorry about that.
Oh, no problem. Well, the question was, who are some of the talents in Kentucky that fans around the country may not know yet but would want to get familiar with because they're going to be big stars in the next few years?
I would say that the biggest one that sticks out to me is Derek Neal. He's very seen around here. He's been in the business probably 15 years. And then I would say a guy that's been in the business under 10 years to look for that is a really solid wrestler would be Brandon Taggart. And, of course, Austin Tyler Morris is another one to look for. Tyler Matrix is really, really good. I'm sure that everyone's probably familiar with, like, a Myron Reed. Shane Mercer is another one that's just waiting on that break, I feel. And, I mean, Kentucky's loaded with talent that's just not been seen, you know, but that all comes with getting in the car and making the right trips, you know. I mean, I'm going to drive 10 hours to drive to Iowa tomorrow to wrestle in the Vile Air Ballrooms for Wrestling Revolver. So you just got to take a chance. You never know what might come about it.
And I was just telling people a couple of moments ago, Wrestling Revolver, very big deal. A lot of great, great talent comes to Wrestling Revolver.
Yeah.
And they do a lot of shows, not only there in Iowa, but across the country. They travel to wherever WrestleMania is in a given year and put on a great show. So fans should definitely get familiar with that company.
Yeah, I was blessed enough to be a part of their the Impact and Revolver merger there in May, and it went really well. And tomorrow night, I'm tagging with OVE in a steel cage match against Matt Palmer, Shane Strickland, and it's a really good promotion to be a part of, and I'm really glad that I made that trip, and I'm looking forward to tomorrow night.
Well, we got just a few minutes left in the show, and I want to give you ample time. If there's anything you would like to say to the listeners, if there's anything you want to plug, upcoming shows, merchandise, the social medias, your favorite seafood restaurant, anything it is, go right ahead.
Most definitely. You can find me on Twitter at Legend of Larry D. You can also, if you like, I've got a documentary out. It's called From Little to Legendary. It's $20. I can ship it anywhere. It's for a small shipping fee. I highly suggest watching it. Back home in Kentucky, I would suggest finding Primetime Wrestling and give them a follow on Facebook. I believe that they're doing something really special here in Kentucky and just making for great wrestling in the state and making and they grow and they get mixed in with veterans like myself. We kind of help them grow and we grow together. I'm excited to see where Primetime is going. By all means, go give Primetime Wrestling a follow on Twitter and go find them on Facebook and give them a like and even give them a share and let everyone else know, because I feel like we're doing something special over in Paris, Kentucky, every Sunday night.
Well, Legendary Larry D, I want to thank you very much for taking the time to be with us. Hopefully at some point our paths will cross in a locker room somewhere around the country. And best of luck to you tomorrow night at Wrestling Revolver. It should be a fantastic show tomorrow.
Most definitely. I appreciate you guys for having me.
All right, fans, get out there, support your local independent wrestling. If you've not seen Legendary Larry D and he's coming to a town near you, you definitely should get a ticket. He's great at what he does, fantastic talent. We will be back with you on Sunday. Phoenix Kid will be with us just hours before he makes his huge return to Alaska. So definitely be with us on Sunday, and we will talk to you then. Get out there and support your local wrestling fans.